Welcome to GemaraMarkings.com, your roadmap to the Talmud Bavli. We highly recommend printing out the PDF of the DAF with the markings, or better yet, emailing us to obtain your own copy of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. If this is your first time visiting the site, we highly recommend clicking on the links to view the sample markings, as well as to hear a brief 4-minute audio explanation of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. Enjoy your shiur.
Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning from the end of Daf Kuf Lamed Ches Omid Beis at the Mishnah. The Mishnah opens up with a situation that we've seen before, whereby a father assigns his property to his son after his death, whereby we understand that he is makne the principal of the property from today, and the peros, the use of the fruit, after the father's death. In other words, as long as the father remains alive, the father will continue benefiting from his property, from the fruits of his property. The Mishnah says, Ha'av toilesh u'ma'achil l'chol mi shiyirtzeh. The father who sold his property, who gave his property to his son, Li'achar Moso, this father has a right to detach the fruits that grow on the property and give them to whomever he wants. Uma shehiniach tolush, and that which at the point of his death remains in a detached form, harehu shel yorshim. The detached fruit, namely the fruit that he was benefiting from while he was alive, that fruit which is detached at the point he dies, is divided amongst all of the brothers, the sons, the yorshim, and it does not go, these detached fruits do not go to the son who was mekabel the matona, who received that particular gift that the father made while he was still alive to that particular son. The Gemara is medayik, draws an inference from the text of the Mishnah. Tolush in, that which is detached goes to the Yorshim, mechubar lo. However, the fruit that is attached to the field at the point the father dies does not go to the Yorshim. Rather, it goes to the son who was mekabel the matona, who received the matona alone. It can be said then that we're viewing the attached fruits as literally attached. They are attached. Many times in halacha we find attached fruits that are ready to be detached, that are ready to be harvested, they're fully ripe, as being viewed as detached. Kola oimed litlosh ketolush domi. That which is ready for detachment is viewed as detached. We're not saying that over here. We're saying that the fruits that are attached at the point the father dies, even if they're fully ripe, they're nevertheless viewed as attached, and they go to that particular son that the father had given the field to as a gift while he was alive. The Gemara points out, but we see otherwise, V'hotanya, we have a source that says, Shomin es ha-mechuborin l'lokeach. We evaluate the value of the attached fruits, and the purchaser is expected to pay the value of those attached fruits to the yorshim. Therefore, we see from this source that attached fruits go to the heirs. In order to understand this particular source a little bit better, we will glance at the Rashbam on the second line from the top where the asterisk is noted. Hakosev kol nechosav mehayom ulachar misa livno. A person assigned his property to his son, the arrangement being mehayom u'le'achar misa, starting from today and being completed after the father's death. V'holach oisoi haben u'mochar hanechosim halolu b'chayi oviv. The son that received the property went ahead and sold those properties while the father was still alive to a purchaser. V'achar zman meis ho'av. Then eventually the father died. Zocha halokeach b'ma shemochalo b'gufa shokarka. The purchaser that purchased from the son at this point becomes the owner of the property. V'myesh b'nechosim perois mechuborin. If at the point the father dies there are attached fruits, lo zocha halokeach ela b'gufa shokarka. The purchaser does not have a right to those attached fruits. He has a right only to the ground itself. Aval beperos, afalgav de mechuborin hein. However, with regard to the fruit, even though they're attached, liyorshin hein, they belong to the heirs. Lefikoch, shomen oison lolokeach. Therefore, we evaluate the value of those attached fruits. And the purchaser who purchased from the son has to compensate the yorshim. So what we see from here is that attached fruits that were part of a property that the father originally had dedicated to a particular son, and we saw that son went and sold it to a purchaser. The attached fruits, though, are part of the estate, of the inheritance. They go to the Yorshim. This counters the case that we inferred from the Mishnah, where attached fruits did not go to the Yorshim. They rather went to that particular son that the property was assigned to. Omer ula lo kasha, kan bivnoi, kan biachir. There's no contradiction between these sources. The case of the Mishnah is where the receiver of the attached fruits would be the son. And the Rashbam explains that's a case where there was no sale to an outsider. Namely, the father assigned the property to the son, the principal from while he was still alive, the fruits to start after the father dies. The son never made any deals with an outsider. The father died. So we say, the detached fruits, literally, those that are literally detached, those go to the Yorshim. However, those fruits that are attached go to the son. However, the case of the Braisa, that is a case involving an Acher. The Rashbam explains, that's a case where the son had sold the property that he, the son, had received from the father to an outsider. In such a case, as the Gemara will explain, the father never intended for that outsider to gain possession of the fruits, even though they are attached. So in that case where there's an outsider involved, as was described, the attached fruits as well as the detached fruits, those go to the heirs. And why do we make this distinction? Hoyul v'daita shel adam kroiva etzel beno. Since a person's mindset and emotions are close with regard to his son. Hence, in the case that the property that the father gave as a gift to his son remains with the son. Namely, the son did not conduct any sales with outsiders. So in that case, the attached fruits will be inherited by that particular son and not distributed amongst the Yorshim. However, as we said before, if that son conducted a sale of the property that he received from his father to an outsider, the outsider will not get possession of the attached fruits, but rather we will be viewing those attached fruits as if they are detached and hence divided amongst the Yorshim. Mishnah. Notice we have a double underline. This is meant to highlight two sections of the Mishnah. The first section involving a case of a father dying, leaving Bonim Gedolim Uktanim. And it's important for us to note at the outset that this Mishnah is not talking about cases where the property had been assigned to someone else or to one particular son, but it's a regular case of a father dying, leaving an estate. So the first section of the Mishnah deals with an estate in which there are sons that are left. The second part of the Mishnah, you'll notice a few lines down, another double underline, Roman numeral number 2, that's a case where there are no sons, but rather there are daughters that are left that are the heiresses. There are older girls and younger girls. In the Mishnah, we will be making reference to different terms, different forms of sustenance. You will see terms like parnosa or mezoinos, misparnesim, nizoinim. Misparnesim refers to clothing. Nizoinim refers to food. Let us start the Mishnah. Hiniach bonim gedolim uktanim. Father died, leaving children, older boys and younger ones. Ein hagdolim misparnesim al yedei haktanim. The older boys do not take from the estate for their clothing costs at the expense of the younger ones. The assumption being, and this is pointed out by the Rashbam, that the parnosa, the clothing costs of older boys, is greater than that of the younger ones. So we say that the older ones do not get their costs for parnosa, for lavush, for clothing at the expense of the young ones. Velo haktanim nizoinim al hagdolim. And likewise, the ktanim, the younger children, whose food costs and care costs are said to be greater than that of the older boys, those, the younger ones, do not derive their mezoinus at the expense of the gdolim. Elo cholkin b'shaveh. Rather, the estate is divided out equally amongst the sons, and each one will derive their mezoinus and parnosa from the chilek, from the section, from the part they receive. The next two lines of the Mishnah will be explained by the Gemara. Nosu hagdolim, yisu haktanim. If the older ones got married, the younger ones get married. Vim omru ktanim hare onu noisim kederech shenasatem atem, Ein shoymin lahem, elamashin nosan lahem aviem nosan. The Gemara is going to point out that superficially, this section of the Mishnah seems to be inherently contradictory. The first clause said that nosu hagdolim yisu ktanim, that the younger ones do get married, and then the second clause says that if the ktanim say hare onu noisim, we are going to get married like you did, so we don't listen to them. That this will be dealt with by the Gemara. Section 2. Hiniach bonois gedolois uktanois. Ein hagdolois misparnesois al yedei uktanos. Very similar to the first section of Mishnah. The older girls do not gain their clothing costs at the expense of the younger ones. Velo haktanos nizonos al hagdolois. And likewise, the younger girls do not derive their mezonos at the expense of the older ones. Elecholkus b'shava, rather, they divide the estate equally. And once again, we mentioned there are no sons in the picture, in this particular picture. And again, we see an expression like we saw earlier in the Mishnah that we'll have to wait for the Gemara to clarify. Nosu gedolos yisu katanois. V'im omru katanos hare e'onu noisois kederach shenasatem atem. Ein shomin lahem. Ze choymer bebonois mi bebonim. The following will be a sort of provision that girls have over boys. Shehabonois nizoinois al habonim. Vein nizoinois al habonos.
in an estate where there are girls and boys, the girls are provided with a special mezoinos provision. Albeit, girls by Torah law do not inherit. However, they are entitled to a mezoinos provision off the top, so to speak. They have a first calling on the estate to make sure their mezoinos needs are provided. However, if there is an estate where there are just girls, so then there is no mezoinos provision for any one of the particular girls, but rather the estate is divided out equally. The topic that we will be learning now can be summarized by the expression, as we see on the side, Godol Achi, the eldest of the sons. What is the halacha with regard to the eldest of the sons that clothes himself from the estate? We noticed in the Mishnah that the sons, the older sons, are not able to clothe themselves at the expense of the ktanim. But rather, all clothing costs and food costs are drawn from the chelik, from the portions that each one, the equal portions that each one receives. The Mishnah opens up, the Gemara, sorry, opens up, Omar Rava, Hai Godol Achi, the Lovash, the Ichsi, mi Beisa, the eldest son who represents the family in court, in dealing with creditors and dealing with the public, if he clothes himself from the estate, my de'ovad ovad, what he did, and the other brothers are not to receive, they do not receive compensation according to the value of what the Godol Achi spent on his clothes. The Gemara asks, how can that be that one of the brothers is able to clothe himself at the expense of all the rest? Our Mishnah said that the elder sons do not clothe themselves at the expense of the younger ones. The Gemara answers, the Mishnah is talking about a case where the brother that decided to clothe himself at the expense of the others is an Odom Botel, where he's not doing anything on behalf of the rest. Masnisen Besharcha. He's, as we said, he's an Odom Botel. That's what the Rashbam says, that they, the rest of the family, doesn't benefit from. However, in the case of the brother that represents the rest of the family, it's actually to their benefit that he's dressed nicely. That way, people will listen to what he says and cause benefit to the rest of the family. So, everyone is benefiting by that. Hence, there's no need for them, the rest of the family, to receive special compensation for the clothing that he, the eldest son, bought. The Gemara asks, but according to the answer that we gave for the Mishnah, that we're talking about an Odom Botel, and hence the Odom Botel, the son that's not, doesn't benefit the rest of them, that he doesn't, that he cannot clothe himself at the expense of the rest, Sharcha, Pshita, that's obvious. He's not benefiting them, so of course he can't clothe himself at the expense of the rest. The Gemara answers, Mal Dutema Nicho Lehu Delo Ninvol. One might have thought that the family is happy that he's clothing himself so that he doesn't look untidy, that he doesn't look dirty, and thereby cause them embarrassment. Komash Molon, the Mishnah comes to tell us that we're not going to make that consideration, but rather, if he's not directly benefiting the rest of them, he cannot draw clothing expenses at the expense of the rest of them. The Gemara now deals with the section of the Mishnah that we had said in learning the Mishnah that we have to wait for the Gemara. Nosu gedoilim yisu ketanim. Gemara asks, "My ka'amar?" And the Rashbam explains, as we did when we learned the Mishnah, The Mishnah itself seems to be inherently contradictory. The early clause said, Nosu gedolim yisu ktanim, and then the subsequent clause said, if the ktanim say that they want to get married, so we don't listen to them. Omar Rav Yehuda hochi komar. You notice in the marking, we have a frame around the next couple lines. The reason for the frame is that this is a new understanding of the Mishnah. And in our marking system, we treat the restatement of Mishnayos and Brises as if they are Tanaic sources themselves, and hence you see it in a frame. Hochi komar, thusly we should understand the Mishnah. We've broken the two phrases down into Aleph, and the next line you see Beis. Nosu gedoilim la'achar mises avihem. If after the father died, money was drawn for the marriage purposes of the elder sons, in other words, money was drawn from the estate for their marriage, yisu ktanim li'achar mises avihem. The younger brothers have a right to an equal amount of money for their marriage. Avol nosu gedoilim b'chaye avihen. If, however, the elder sons got married while their father was still alive, and their father gave to each one of those elder sons whatever he gave them, the omru ktanim la'achar mises avihem, and then the younger brothers, after their father died, said, Hare anu noisim kederach shenasatem atem. We are going to draw money from the estate as per the amount you received from father when he was alive. Ein shomin lahen. They have no claim. Elamash shenosan lahen avihen nosan. What the father did while he was alive, he did. That was the father exercising his options, his rights to do with his money as he pleases. And the younger sons that are getting married only after their father died cannot use their father's decisions while he was alive to lay claim on a portion of the estate toward their marriage. Rather, whatever is left at the point the father dies is divided equally amongst all of the sons, not taking into consideration any funds that the elder sons received from their father while he was still alive. As we go on in the Gemara, we start a new topic. We will take a look at the topic heading that we see in the outside margin under the heading Nosei. Baal benichse ishto, a husband with respect to his wife's properties. Yoresh have, o, skipping the parentheses, o lokeach have. Are we to view him as an heir? Meaning, he has the halachas of a yoresh, not that he is actually yoresh, because we're not talking about anyone dying yet, but does he have the status of an heir, or does he have the status of a purchaser? And there are many nafkaminas, there are many differences in halacha, in law, that apply, and these will be featured in the Gemara itself. Let's go over the note, because we skipped a parentheses section. We ask, Baal benichse ishto, a husband with regard to the property that his wife brings into the marriage, Yoresh have ubali choiv al peh shel ishto goivin mimenu, if we view him as an heir, then any loans that the wife took out before she got married, in other words, this is a woman that owes money, and they're not written loans, they're oral loans, loans without a document signed by witnesses. If we view the husband as a yoresh, then the creditors can come to that husband and say, we want you to pay up the debts that your wife incurred. On the other hand, or do we view the husband with respect to his wife's property, the property that she brought into the marriage, as a purchaser? Veloi goivin mimenu. A creditor whose loan was extended by orally, we'll say, as opposed to via a document, De milva al peh einoi goyve min halakuchos. As is standard legal procedure, it is known that oral loans do not collect from those people that purchased property from the borrower. Just like people that purchased property from the borrower are not subject to pay off the borrower's debts, so too a husband, if we're going to view him as a purchaser with regard to his wife's properties, he, the husband, will not be required to pay off those debts that his wife incurred orally. Turning to the Gemara. Hiniach bonois gedoilois uktanis. Sholach le'avua bar geniva le'rova. Avua bar geniva sent a question to Rava. Yilamdenu rabenu. Kindly teach us. Lovsa vi'ochla. A woman who borrowed money and consumed and used the money that she borrowed. Now, she owes money, v'omda v'niseis, and she went ahead and got married, brought her possessions to her husband, as all married women do. Ba'al, loikeach have, oy yoresh have. A husband, how do we view him in legal terms? Do we view him as a purchaser or as an heir? We've assigned Aleph to the Lokeach or Beis to the Yoresh. The Gemara now goes over these two categories. Aleph, Lokeach Havei. Do we view the husband as a purchaser? Umilva alpe einoi goyve min alukuchos. And as such, that husband would not be bound to pay off the loans, the debts that the wife had incurred before she married him. The rule being that oral loans, loans that are not recorded in documents or and signed by witnesses, those kind of loans are not paid off by those who purchased from the borrower. Oy dilma yorei shave, or maybe we view the husband as an heir. Umilva al peh goyve min hayorshim. And as is known, when a person dies, having left debts, even if the debts were non-written, nevertheless, the heirs are obligated to pay off their father's debts. Before we continue in the Gemara, we notice some geometric activity. We see volcano forms and their position as you scan ahead on the in the sukkah. You notice how the position flips back and forth. Narrow part up, narrow part down, and again, flip-flop. The Mivneh note on the outside margin indicates this. The Mivneh, Ma'akav, keeping track. We're going to keep track of the direction of the discussion. With the narrow section pointing upwards, Hoichochois loimar diyoresh havei. This will be indicative of the side saying that the husband is viewed as an heir. When you see the form flipped over, that will be an attempt to reject that contention. So the question was posed to Rava, Omar Lei, the Gemara continues, Rava answers, Tanina, we have a Tanaic source, our Mishnah, and it says as follows, Nosu gedolois yisu ktanois. My love, what does that mean? Nosu gedolois libaal, where the elder daughters married a man, in other words, they brought money into their marriage to their husbands. Yisuk tanois mi baal. When the time comes for the younger sisters to marry, they draw funds from the husbands of their older sisters. So, what do we see from here? We see that if the younger ones are drawing funds from the husbands, it would seem that the husband's status is that of a yoresh. The Gemara rejects that understanding of the Mishnah. Loi, nosu gedolois lebaal, yisu ketanois lebaal. Simply, if the elder daughters married husbands, drawing from the estate, so too the younger girls, when they get married, they too will draw money from their father's estate. The Rashbam points out, Yisu ketanos libal mi momon avihem hamunach v'yoymed adayim betfusas abayis. They will draw money for their marriage from the money that's part of the estate, that's still betfusas abayis, that's still undivided. Keneged oyse momon shenot lahagdola, an equal amount to the money that her elder sister drew from that very same estate. So we see no reference here to drawing funds from a husband. The Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? V'hotoni Rebbi Chia. We have the following source, and it could be understood from the Rashbam, in the Hemshech of the Rashbam, that this is Rava responding, saying, hey, but we see from a source that is taught by Rebbi Chia, which says, Nasu gedolos libaal, yisu ktanos mi baal. Just like Rava's original understanding of the Mishnah. Here it says explicitly that in a Tanaic source taught by Rebbi Chia, that if the elder daughters married husbands, when the time comes for the younger sisters to marry, they draw their marriage expenses from their elder sisters' husbands. So once again, we would categorize the husband as a yoresh, someone who does have to pay off the money owed, so to speak, by his wife. The Gemara rejects this conclusion by saying it might be true that the husbands of the elder sisters have to pay the marriage expenses of the younger ones, but that's not a function of the husband being categorized as Rava wanted to say a yoresh, but rather he is a lokeach. If that be the case, so why is the Baal paying off the expenses? The Gemara explains, Dilma shiny parnosa di is le kola. The payment known as parnosa, namely money paid toward a woman's marriage, her marriage expenses, that's how we're viewing the term parnosa, her marriage costs, her marriage expenses, is a very prominent type of expense. And that type of expense can be collected even from purchasers. So that we can say, in general, a Baal is viewed as a purchaser, and as such, he does not have to pay off the debts incurred by his wife. Why over here is it that when the Ktanos want to get married, the Ktanos, turn to the husbands of their elder sisters and expect Parnosa payment? That's because, as the Gemara says, the Islay Kola, it's a well-known expense, and people who purchase from those that still owe Parnosa costs, they were risking themselves, knowing fully well that when the time comes to pay those marriage expenses, they will be drawn upon. Amale Rav Papa La Rava. Rav Papa, though, as you can see from the direction of our marking, he's coming to strengthen Rava's position, namely, strengthen the claim that a Baal is to be viewed as a Yoresh. So Rav Papa says to Rava, Lav hainu desholach Ravin be'igrisei. Now we've circled Ravin's name because reference will be made to him when we get to Amud Beis. And you can already see the use of an arrow in the margin, the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Amud Beis. We'll wait for that later. Is it not so that Ravin sent in a letter the following? We notice a frame, but the frame looks different than the standard frame. It's a dashed or broken line frame, and that's because, as we've indicated on the inside margin, this is not a Tanaic source per se. So Ravan sent the following letter. Mi shemes v'hiniach amono bas. A person that had been married, he died, leaving a widow and a daughter. Almanosoi nizoinis minechosov. The widow draws her maintenance from her husband's estate. Niseis habas. When the daughter gets married, almanoso nizoinis minechosov. The almana continues to draw her sustenance from the estate. The estate that was in fact inherited by the daughter. Meso habas. When the daughter dies, leaving her father's widow still alive, Omar Rav Yehuda ben Achoisei shel Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina al Yodi hoya Maisa. A situation like this happened with me. V'amru, and it was ruled, Almanosoi nizoines minechosov. The almana continues to draw her maintenance, her zonos, from those properties, namely properties that are currently in the possession of the husband of the deceased's daughter. Iamris Bishlamo Yoresh Have, if you say that the husband is categorized as a Yoresh, Mishum Hachi Almanoso Nizonis Minichosov, I can thereby understand very easily why the Almona draws her maintenance from his properties. That's the halacha. The widow gets her mizonos from the heirs, from the those that inherit. Elo iamris lokea chave. If, however, you view the husband as a purchaser, namely as a purchaser with regard to his wife's properties, amaini zoinis minichosov. Why should it be that the almona draws her mizonos from those properties? Imagine a married man sold off properties while he was alive to purchasers. Eventually he dies. The widow doesn't go to the purchasers to draw her mizonos. At this point then, Rav Papa is maintaining Rava's position based on this letter that Ravin sent. Omar Abaye, Ilav de Sholach Ravin Anan Lo Yadinan. And if not for Ravin's letter, would we not know that a husband is viewed as a Yoresh? V'ha'atanan, we have a Tanaic source, a Mishnah that teaches the following. Elu Hein She'ein Chozrin B'Yovel. The following are examples of properties that are not restored to original owners in the Yovel year. Generally speaking, when the Yovel year arrives, which is generally understood to be a 50-year cycle, so when year 50 comes around, all property that was purchased during those years from original owners, those properties are returned to the original owners. The original owners being people that inherited those properties traced back to the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. There are cases, as are going to be mentioned now, that do not get returned. They are Habachora, V'hayoresh es ishto, a firstborn who received a double portion. That is not considered a purchase, it's considered a matana, and as such, the Bechor, who received an extra portion, he maintains that even through a Yovel year. And more importantly for us is this, Hayoresh es ishto. What does that show? The fact that the property that a man inherited from his wife is not restored to the wife's family shows us that the Baal has a din of a Yoresh, because if he had a din of a Lokeach, we just said before that purchased properties are restored to their original owners. At this point then, we see further strengthening of the position that was originally taken by Rava, that a Baal is viewed as a Yoresh. Notice in our markings, though, the position of the volcano flips around with the narrow side pointing down, and we indicated before that we're going to see a direction counter to that. But interestingly, Rava's the speaker. Bear with the Gemara and you'll see why we position things like we did. Omale Rava. The Hashta de Sholach, even with Ravin having sent the letter, and this is of course a response to what Rav Papa said. Rav Papa had indicated to Rava that we can see the Yoresh position from Ravin's letter. It seems that Rava is responding to that and says, and now that he sent this letter, does that convince us that he is a Yoresh? Well, let us read that again. Amale Rava, v'hashta d'sholach mi yadinon. And now that the letter was sent, do we really know that he is a Yoresh? Ha Amar Rav Yosi Rav Chanina, be'usha hiskino. The Sanhedrin, when they were exiled to Usha, they made a ruling. Ha'isha shemochro benichse malug b'chaye ba'ela umesa, a woman who sold her nichse malug properties while her husband was alive. Nichse malug properties are properties a woman brings into a marriage that are not recorded. Their value is not recorded in the ksuba. It's property that, as we said, is brought into the marriage, and there's a lot more to say on the topic, but it's not important to get into that detail right now. If that woman sold those properties while her husband was alive and then died, habaal moitzi miyad halukuchos, the baal has a right to turn to those that purchased the nichse malug from his wife and claim, hey, I have first claim on those properties. I am viewed as a loikeach rishon. If that be the case, we see from the Takonas Usha that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina reports that a baal does not have a yoresh status. He has a loikeach status. And as a loikeach rishon, he is able to preempt those that bought from this married woman, claiming that he had first claim on it, because he was already viewed as a lokeach at the point of their marriage. The Rashbam elaborates a little bit more, and we can see it. There's an asterisk that we've put in the Rashbam. E amris bishom alokeach shavu rabbanan misha shenosa. If we say that the husband is classified as a purchaser from the point that he married the wife, mishum hachi mapik, therefore we can understand how the husband turns to those that purchased from his wife subsequent to their marriage and collects those properties from them. The lokeach rishon havi is viewed as a first lokeach. If you say that the baal, the husband, is viewed as a yorish mishas nisuin, from the point of their marriage he gets labeled as an heir, amai mapik, why is it that he takes property from the purchasers? Loma tiknu beusha shabal motzi, why would they establish in Usha, the town that the Sanhedrin was exiled to, that the baal is able to collect from them, from the purchasers? V'halo ho'isha she moireshes oso, the woman that's in the position whereby she is bequeathing the properties unto him, she, however, mochra, she sold before that point came. V'enkoach b'yorshim lirash mashem mochra avien, there's no strength on the part of heirs to inherit that which their father sold previously. Elavade miditiknu shabal motzi, rather, it's quite conclusive from the fact that the Sanhedrin established that a husband does have claims against those subsequent purchasers. The primary ruling in Usha was to establish the husband as a purchaser with regard to her properties from the point he married her. And therefore he can take from them, Sharei Kida Mekho, the Mekhon, Shalukuchos, for his purchase, so to speak, preceded their purchase. His purchase of those properties, so to speak, took place at the point that he married her. And their purchase from her was subsequent to that. Hence he has first calling. After all said and done, we are really in a cloud. We have representations of a husband as a Yoresh, as we saw in the case of Yovel. We see a husband presented as a purchaser, as in the case of Rav Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, and Takonas Usha. What should we make of all of this? El Omer of Ashi. Baal Aleph Shavu Rabbonon Kiyoresh Beis V'Shavu Rabbonon Kilokeach. In fact, it depends. The husband is established by the Rabbonon as a Yoresh at times, and at times viewed as a purchaser. V'Hecho De Tavale Avdule, and that which is best for him is what has been established. So we have to evaluate each case on its own merits. But I want to note at the very outset that though the Gemara said that which is best for him has certain limitations, as we'll see later in the Gemara. There will be others that are competing for that position. Let us see the cases. Gabi Yovel, in the case of returning of properties in the Yovel year, what would be most beneficial for the husband? Let's just remind ourselves, if a person is viewed as a purchaser, when Yovel year comes, he has to part with those properties. Therefore, with regard to Yovel, Shavu Rabbonon Kiyoresh, Mishum Seido Didei. They established the husband to be categorized as an heir so as to prevent his own loss. Gabi, the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, with regard to Takonas Usha, whereby a woman sold her nichsei malug to others, we said a husband has a claim on those properties from those that purchased from his wife. Shavu Rabbonon kelokeach mishum seido didei. The Rabbonon established him as a purchaser once again to protect him from loss, because if he would have been categorized as an heir, he would not be able to turn to those that purchased from his wife. Gabi de Rovin, with regard to the letter that was sent to Rovin, where we saw that the Almona was drawing from her husband's daughter's husband. We saw the Almona drawing from a Baal, so to speak, and you can navigate using the arrows that you see here, which points to Omer Aleph, and find the parallel arrow on Omer Aleph, and you'll notice the line where Rova's name was circled. Regarding that particular halacha, we saw that the almona was drawing from the husband. That would indicate that the husband had a yoresh status. But as a result of the yoresh status, we see the husband, in effect, losing out. That is because we are more concerned with the loss that would have been sustained otherwise by the almona. The Gemara says, Gabi derovin, mishum pseido de almona, so as to prevent her from losing, shavu rabbonon kiyoresh, we categorized the husband as a yoresh. Notice in our markings, this is a very fine marking, but we have a semicolon before the gabi derovin, before the word gabi. The reason for that is to break the flow from that which preceded this point. Namely, before this point, the emphasis had been on benefiting the husband. At this point, though, we see the husband is not really benefiting, the almona is benefiting, and because of our concern for her benefit, we categorize the husband as a yoresh. The Gemara asks, we had a halacha just before, the Takonas Usha, where the husband turned to the purchasers that purchased from his wife, the Nirsei Malug, we didn't seem to be concerned about their loss, and we rather opted to benefit the husband and give him increased strength. The Hal Gabi de Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, the Ikop Seido Lulukuchos, there was loss to them, to the purchasers, the Shavua Rabbonon Kilokeach, and we made him, the husband, a lokeach, not taking into consideration the pseida de lekuchos, their loss. So why not, with the case of the almona, let us view the husband as a lokeach and not take her loss into consideration? Because by categorizing him as a lokeach, the almona would not be able to draw her mezonos from them, or from him, the husband categorized as lokeach. The Gemara answers, Hasam, in the case of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, we're not quite that concerned with the loss of those purchasers. Inhu afsidu anafshayu. They caused their own loss. They hurt themselves. Kevon de'iko baal, since they were buying property from a married woman, they knew fully well that there is a husband in the picture. And that husband, in effect, the Rashbam explains, was really hoping one day to inherit those properties from his wife. Lo ibaya lehu lemizvan miitsa. They should not have purchased from a woman, the Asfatusi Gavra, that's currently living in the domain of a man, namely her husband. The Rashbam points out what we said, and also concludes the original question. So let's see the Rashbam. The Asfatusi Gavra v'roi liyorsho kishetomus. They bought from a woman living under a man, living with her husband, a man that was in the position to inherit her when she dies, when his wife dies. V'elu ha'erimu l'hotziom miyado. And they, in a sort of underhanded fashion, they bought from her, they sort of went around the husband's back and bought those nichsei maluk from the wife. V'kuch yafsidu. So it's only fitting that they should lose out. But with regard to our opening question, how do we view a husband with regard to his wife's debts that she incurred before she married him? Does that husband have to pay off those creditors? Pirush Rabbeinu Chananel v'roa ani. As Dvorov, the Rabbeinu Chananel explains, and the Rashbam says, I agree with what he says. Lovso v'ochla, a woman who borrowed money as a single woman and enjoyed and used those monies up. V'omdo v'niseis, and she then got married. Mistabra de kiyoresh have. Most likely, we will categorize the husband as an heir, and as a result of that, he will have to pay off her debts. Mishum pseida de malve. So as to protect the lender, the malve, from loss. Of course, when he loaned money to a single woman. It's not like the case of the people in Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina's halacha, where they bought property from a married woman. The case of our Gemara, the opening question, was loaning money to a single woman. So, of course, we are interested in protecting the lender. The chain sugya de shmeitza, the Rashbam concludes, the chol hechadiko pseida. The flow of the sugya seems to indicate that wherever there is a loss, kagom pseida de almona, for example, the case of the almona's loss, where she was able to draw on the properties of the daughter's husband, the lekola meimar ihu de afsidan afshe, where we encounter a situation where we say that the person did not cause himself a loss. Shavyu Rabbonon Kiyoresh. We then view the husband as a Yoresh, and he will have to pay off those expenses. With that, we conclude the 8th parak of Bava Basra, and we hope to review it at some future point. The 9th parak begins, Mi Shemeis V'niach Bonem Ubonos. The person described here dies, leaving sons and daughters. Before we continue any further in the Mishnah, let's take a look at the note we have on our outside margin, the Nosei, the topic heading, Chalukas Nechosim, division of property, B'Nechosim Merubin, when the deceased leaves a large estate. Of course, what large and what small is, that the Gemara will define. Likewise, a case where the property has to be divided under circumstances known as nechosim mu'atim. So the Mishnah continues. Bizman sha nechosim merubin, habonim yirshu v'abonos yezunu. When the estate is classified as Nechasim Merubin, we'll use the term alone without explaining it, that the Gemara will do. So under circumstances of Nechasim Merubin, the sons inherit, and the daughters receive allowance for their maintenance. Nechasim Mu'atim, if, however, it's an estate categorized as that, Habonos Yazunu V'Abonim Yishalu Al Hapsochim. Under circumstances like that, the daughters receive sustenance, and the sons shall go knocking on doors, go begging, fend for themselves. Admon Oimer B'Shvil Shani Zocher Hipsadeti. Admon claims, why should it be that just because I am a male, I should lose out? Omar Rabon Gamliel Roya Ani Es Divrei Admon. Rabbi Gamliel sees that Admon's position ought to be accepted and not have automatic loss, but rather they should be able to draw equally the sons and the daughters for their sustenance. The Gemara asks, V'kama Merubin, what is considered an estate of Nechasim Merubin? Omar of Yudam Arav, Kidei Shiyazunu Mehen Elu V'Elu Shneim Osor Chodesh. If there's enough money in the estate for Parnosa and Mezoinois, for clothing and food expenses for a period of 12 months for sons and daughters, that's called Nechasim Merubin. Rav Yehuda was the speaker just now who quoted his Rebbe Rav. When Rav died, Rav Yehuda went over to learn by Shmuel. Ki amriso kamei de Shmuel, when I said over this teaching to Shmuel, Omar, Shmuel responded, Zu divrei Rabban Gamliel bar Rebbe. The standard that Rav taught to determine what Nechasim Merubin are, that's a teaching that was taught by Rabban Gamliel bar Rebbe. Avol chachomim oimrim, Kidei shiozunu mehen elu v'elu ad shiyivgiru. What is considered Nechasim Merubin? Enough money in the estate for the sons and daughters to be maintained until they reach Bagrus. Bagrus is an age that is generally associated with above bar mitzvah, above bas mitzvah. The Rashbam says, Ad shiv guru, shekach hisno lohen avien. Thusly, their father had arranged, Ad shetiv guron, until they, the daughters, until they get to Bagrus age, O tinsavon, kinomar b'ksubis. Or, if they get married before Bagrus. So, the Rab Chachomim that Shmuel is presenting to us holds that Nechasim Merubin are enough for the Bonim and Bonos to maintain themselves, not for 12 months, as was taught by Rav, whose teaching was Rabban Gamliel bar Rebbe, but rather Ad Bagrus. Notice in our markings, we've dashed underlined the expression Ad Shiv Guru to be contrasted with the dashed on underlining before, which said Shnei Mosar Chodesh. The Gemara continues, Itmar Nami, Ki also Ravin, Omar Rav Yochanan, Viamri La, Omar Rabo, Labrachano, Omar Rav Yochanan. We have a squiggle underline under the expression Amri La, because this is a marking we use to differentiate between different possibilities. Hence, here we had one possibility where Ravin was quoting Rabbi Yochanan, and in this one, in the second possibility, Rabo Bar Chana is quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Either way, the teaching is as follows: Kol Shiyozunu Mehen Elu VeElu Ad She Yivgaru Hein Merubin. This being similar to that which Shmuel taught in the name of the Chachomim. Pochos Mikan, less than that, Hare Elu Mu'atin. Let us explain the Gemara literally. We said that if there's enough for the girls and boys to be maintained ad bagrus, until they reach adulthood, that's considered merubin. Less than that, namely less than the amount required for both sons and daughters, if there's enough for, let us say, daughters and almost everything necessary for sons, but not mamish everything, not literally everything, then that would be called muatim. What did the Mishnah teach with regard to nechasim muatim? The Mishnah taught that in the case of nechasim muatim, the Tanakhama said that the daughters are maintained through the nechasim muatim and the sons go begging. The Gemara asks, this is a little peculiar. V'ileko li'elu u'li'elu ad shivgru. If you're going to classify nechasim mu'atim as being that which is less than the 100% amount required for elu v'elu, the sons and daughters, so shakli luhu bonos l'kulhu, will the daughters get everything? We're talking about a case where, according to the inference we made, that if there is, let's say, 100% for the bonos and 99% for the bonim, the categorization drops down immediately to nechosim muatim, and the girls would get everything. Because that's what the Mishnah said, that in nechosim muatim, the daughters get everything. That's not reasonable, though. Why should they get everything? There's enough for them already. Elo omar rova, moitzien lohen mezoinus labonos ad shivgaru. If you have a situation where there's not enough for 100% maintenance of sons and daughters, Achi of Guru, what we do is we'll take the 100% amount that is sufficient for the daughters. They get that. Vashar, and the balance, Labonim. The Rashbam, the three lines from the top, says, Vashar Labonim, Vahaydi Kotoni Shalu Apsochim, and that which the Mishnah taught, that the sons go knocking at doors. That's when they use up that balance that they were drawing from for their food costs. Once the sons finished the balance that was there that they received, at that point they start begging, and the daughters will continue maintaining themselves from the funds that were available for their mezonos. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.